Okay. So, as I mentioned before, what we want to do is think about why something like justification matters to us every day. Why it matters to you tomorrow. Why it matters for you right now. I think what we'll do, I said that like I didn't have this planned out. I know what we're going to do, is we're going to look at a story. I'm just going to read a story to you that Jesus tells. It's from Luke chapter 18. Jesus tells this story. It's a very everyday sort of story. He tells this story about a guy who's a Pharisee. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because I mentioned this a lot this week. If you were in class, some of you were. I always like to point out to myself and to everybody else that it's really easy to read the story of Jesus in the Gospels and come across the Pharisees and just sort of turn our noses up and think, oh, Pharisees are awful, horrible. And I'm not defending them, by the way. I'm not getting ready to tell you, really, they're great. They're not. But we come across the Pharisees. Isn't it strange, though? We come across the Pharisees, and we immediately don't recognize anything about ourselves in anything they do or say. We immediately only recognize ourselves, what? In the few, or in the small minority of people who seem to be on Jesus' side. Right? Like a leper who is healed and then wants to follow Jesus. Or a demon-possessed man who's healed and then wants to follow Jesus. Or Mary Magdalene who comes to Jesus and wants to be with him. We gravitate towards those. We sort of see ourselves in those people. Or in this story I'm getting ready to read, there's a guy, a tax collector. We see ourselves in him. But we also need to see ourselves in the Pharisee in this story. Because I think that's one of the reasons he's there. So I'm just going to read the story. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else. Now that's really important because one of the sure signs, remember at the beginning of the talk, I talked about this idea of Jesus and whatever that and might be. I'll maybe throw in a few possibilities later. One of the sure signs that we're not satisfied enough with God saying that we're right before his eyes is when we start to look at things we do or don't do, and then we look at others and think, unlike those people, right? We sing traditional hymns in our church. They've got like a guitar. Maybe everybody here has this. Maybe a bad example. Maybe all of you have a guitar. Or, you know, we use a hymn book. They don't even dress up at church. We have a building. They just meet in a home. Any number of things where we start to look at ourselves, and when we start to look at ourselves, it's a dead giveaway if we immediately identify ourselves over against people who are not like us because we look at them as like being less, or we might even look at them as being legalistic, or we might even look at them as being, they don't take it seriously enough. And we start to look at ourselves as sort of the standard. Now, the reason that's important is every single one of us has a tendency to do this in our lives. Every single one of us. So he looked, he told this to those who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else. Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. Now, a tax collector is, as you know, just really quick, a tax collector is a Jewish person who works for the Romans. And he makes his money by collecting taxes for the Romans, by adding to those taxes. So he has to go to his Jewish neighbors, say, you know, I'm here for like, I don't know, 10 denarii. I'm making that up. And he says, but I'm going to need 12. And if you don't give me 12, I'm turning you in. And so he gets to pocket a little bit of the money, right? So these are not popular people. I mean, they're unclean. They can't go to the temple. They're viewed like to be like Gentiles. And so you have these two people up. So you have this ultra-religious, very conservative, very proper, knows the Bible, does everything right, apparently. And then you have this guy that you just I mean, you just couldn't stand him. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed. So he stood all by himself and prayed out loud, God, I thank you. Well, if he stopped right there, it'd be decent prayer. But unfortunately, he doesn't stop right there. And it turns out, he's not really that thankful. He sounds sort of pious. God, I just really, you know, I just thank you. I mean, that's how I imagine his voice was. Maybe it wasn't. I just thank you. And you think, wow, yeah, he's grateful to God. He just understands God's grace. He's just, what he has from God. He sounds so grace and theological. He's so devoted to God, so pious. God, I thank you that I'm not like other people. Or even this guy, this tax collector. I fast twice a week, give a tenth of all I get. Well, the news is, this guy's free to fast 7 days a week if he wants. He could fast 365 days a year if he wants. But the truth is, he only has to fast once a year, according to the law. Once, on the Day of Atonement, he has to fast. He's free to fast twice a week if he wants. But do you see what he's done? Instead of just keeping the law and then keeping his mouth shut, he's decided what makes me something is not just keeping the law like once a year. What makes me something is I fast twice a week. Not like those impious, dirty people who like fast once a year according to the law. I mean, I'd twice. And I'm sure if he found out somebody's fasting three times, he'd up it to four. And that's his whole thing. Thank you, Lord. I'm not like those people, but look at me. And here's what makes me not like those people. I'm more pious than they are. I'm more religious. In fact, I just show everybody, I love you more than he does. You know how you can tell? By what I do. It's what makes me something. Do you see, this guy, and this is common, this is the common thing for sort of the Pharisees in the New Testament, not all of them, but as a group, is it's not good enough for them simply to live a life that's faithful to God. They have to have other things that they point to for their identity, that set them apart. It's not good enough that God says, hey, I've set you apart to be my people, and I'm your covenant God, and I have a special relationship with you that I don't have with anybody else on the planet. That wasn't good enough. So they had to add to it. And when they added to it, basically what they're saying is, that's my identity. My identity is not that I'm just, you know, just a Jew who God has called, or that Abraham's my father, and all these other things. He's not satisfied with that. What he's satisfied in is he can point to things and say, this is what makes me something. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Right? So here's this guy. He's got nothing to give. He doesn't even fast twice a week. He doesn't even probably fast once a year. And he's not even allowed to take part anyway. There is nothing this guy has to bring. But the fact of the matter is, there's nothing the first guy has to bring either. So this guy just comes and says, Lord God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Then Jesus says, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. In other words, God, this is a story, God looks down upon the man who cries out only for mercy and comes to God, not with what he brings, not with his identity intact, but comes to God, looks at his own identity and thinks, God, the only thing I could possibly ask for his mercy, because I've got nothing to bring. And then Jesus himself says, that man went home justified. Well, I think this is one of my favorite texts in the whole Bible about justification. But not simply because I look at the tax collector and think, man, it's just me, that's me. Well, it is me. Don't get me wrong. Mercy alone. But I like this text in this way too. It's a constant reminder to me of how often I look at myself and I look at my life and I think, Lord, I thank you. that I'm not like those people. I mean, they might be Christians, and I'm willing to say they probably are, right? The skin of their teeth, barely, but I thank you, I'm not like them. That's sort of me. And so the reason I'm pointing this out is the same thing we're talking about for justification. It's the same and only hope for the Pharisee just as it is for the tax collector. It's their only hope. And the good news is, it's hope for both. And the good news is, it's the message for both. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, among some of you, there's probably some Pharisees, and I can tell by the way you're looking at me, and there's some of you who are probably like tax collectors, and you look kind of pliable, and I'm going to really spend my time with you. Here's what I'm going to say about each and every one of you. You are both every day. Yeah. And I'm not insulting you. I am. I'm both every day. Sometimes simultaneously. Right? I can be simultaneously ultra judgmental of everybody and also feel sort of useless and filled with sort of self-loathing at the same time about any sort of prospect I have of ever doing anything right. I can simultaneously look at somebody or just look at my life and be like, hey, I didn't sin as much as I did yesterday. I think I'm a Christian. Right? As much as I might go to bed and think, I've got nothing to stand on here. Those things might happen sort of back to back. Now, it's good to be able to say, I didn't sin. That's an important thing for a Christian to be able to say, right? But even then, you see, even when we have some sort of, the Lord gives us victory over some sort of sin, even then, what we can never do is point to that and say, you see, I'm right with God because I managed not to sin today. But you should, it's good, right? But even when God grants us victory over sin, that is not the basis for why we're right with Him. And even when we're caught up with pride, and even when we're sort of happy with ourselves and pointing to ourselves, that is not ultimately the thing that will keep us apart from God either. So we can't point to either one of those things. We can't point to either of those things. The only thing we can do is believe what God says about us, which will then point us away from those other things. So that's why I like to say justification is the cure for both pride and fear. Justification is both the cure for being full of yourself, thinking you're better than everybody else. It is also the cure for guilt. And it's good news because it's the cure for people who carry both of those things around at any given moment. Paul says to the Galatians, because he understood how tricky people are, because he was a person himself. And so Paul writes this letter to the Galatians, and it's all about how you can't add anything to Jesus, right? Now, it's unlikely that here in this, what's the name? It's not Bandon. What's the church called? West Side, sorry.
I was Bandon Baptist,
but I knew that wasn't right. It's unlikely that this week sort of a group comes in and says, hey, by the way, we're the Christian circumcision party, and we're here, and then like people are like, hey, I want to get on board with that. I think that sounds good, right? So it's unlikely that's going to happen. It's unlikely that people are going to come in and say, hey, you know, we need to talk about what you're eating, clean, unclean. So it's unlikely that that's going to happen. But the thing is, the same thing that Galatians were susceptible to, and that is those two things, that you could fill in the blanks with anything. It's sort of, yeah, you need Jesus. Sure, you need. We all agree you need Jesus. Now, I mean, who doesn't? All Christians would say you need Jesus. But if you really want to be a Christian, you got to have fill in the blank. But Paul understood how tricky we are. And he understood that even people who know they don't have to add anything to Jesus can even turn that into a basis for their own justification. In other words, put it this way. You have this sort of Jewish Christian who's confused. And he's like, yeah, I'm a Christian. I believe in the Messiah. And I'm circumcised. Look at me. Well, you know what a Gentile could do? They could say, look at me. I don't need anything but Jesus. I'm better than those people. Do you understand? That is also like legalism. So it goes both ways. And at the very end of the letter, Paul says, look, Galatians, circumcision is nothing. That is, keeping the law is nothing. But he says, also, not keeping it is also nothing. He says, neither circumcision matters nor uncircumcision. It doesn't matter being a Jew. It doesn't matter being a Gentile. You can't point at any of those things that you do or don't do and say, that's what makes me right with God. And that's the big deal that Paul ends in. That's how Paul ends the whole letter. I think at the very end, he pulls up and says, oh, by the way, Gentiles, don't think that you're something because you're not like those legalistic people. He kind of levels the playing field. And I think that's sort of, if we can understand that, then we can understand that justification is not just the message to those who would be filled with pride. It is. It's not just the message to those who would be filled with pride. It's also the message to those who know themselves not to have anything. It's the message for those who feel like their identity is crushed. It's for those who have an identity that's filled with self-loathing and doubt and fear and guilt and sort of afraid of everything that goes bump in the night. But even those who feel that way can't look at that and say, God, you know what makes me a Christian? I'm so free. What makes us a Christian is God declaring us by faith to be right in Jesus, apart from anything we do or don't do. That's the basis for it. Now, how does this apply in everyday life? Well, I'm going to share a story with you that I don't know if I've ever shared this story with anybody. I'm not making that up. It sounds like a canned thing that a speaker says, but hopefully you don't think, well, now he's going to lie. I don't really think I've shared this with any group of people except maybe my wife. So, and you're going to think this is like a lame story, but I used to play in a band, like a sort of professional music band. And I was the guitar player, and the guys in the band with me were ultra good musicians. And I mean, I was good enough to be in the band, but I always thought of myself as kind of the least. And for good reason. And we played in lots of places where there was some of the, like we often would play with this other band, and the guy who played the violin, we call it fiddle, in the other band, he just won a Grammy Award for the best bluegrass fiddler on earth. And so we would be playing in like his band's after us. I'm like, okay, great. And I used to play, with such fear that if we were playing a song that I was really comfortable with, I was good. But I knew I could look down at the song sheet and know at the what's next. I knew what's coming next, and I'm just consumed with what's coming next and whether I'm going to blow it or not. And I would spend hours at home practicing. I mean, I love to play, but often I was driven by fear, thinking, I've got to practice because if I don't, I'm going to make a mistake, and then somebody's going to say something about me. You're like, what's this have to do with justification? Well, this went on for a long time. A long time. And one day I was sort of thinking about it. I'd been talking to Denise about it, and she's like, you're just going to have to let it go. You can't change, you can't get, and she said, you know, tonight when you stand up on stage, you can't be any better at that moment than you can be at that moment. And that's it. And a couple days later, it dawned on me that what she had just told me relates to justification. In other words, whatever, you know, like, what does this have to do with justification? I'm going to tell you. What I realized was, it wasn't enough for me just to think, God accepts me in Jesus. But here I am sort of using this gift that God has given me, this thing that I love to do, and all I can think about is, will people think I'm good? Will people think, man, that guy can play? Will they know me as like, the guy in that band, he can play? Or will they be like,
That band would be good without that guy.
Now, this might not sound like much, but that was sort of a revolutionary moment in my own mind about the truth of the practicality of justification. Because what I was really trying to do was seek my own justification. That is, my own sort of reason for being something. I was trying to find my own identity in what? What I could do, or just what people wouldn't say about me. I was just driven by fear. And it dawned on me, why is it not good enough for me to believe that God says, I don't care if you can play guitar better than you can at this moment or not. I don't care if the next solo, if you completely blow it. That is not going to change our relationship. I'm not going to think differently. I'm going to get to heaven and be like, you know, that one night you really blew that solo. I mean, it was pretty good, you know, but I mean, you could have probably... No! And so that might sound like a very mundane, who cares sort of event, but my view is this. If a doctrine like justification doesn't make a difference for us in everyday, like, common things, then it's not really making a difference for us. Because we will do anything, I will, I'm going to say we, I don't want to offend anybody, but we will do anything to kind of build up our own identity that we can point to and say, you see, I am something. Or, out of fear, I'm nothing. In both cases, what's the remedy? Is to step back and think, God declares, and God doesn't lie, God declares that I am right before Him, and that I'm in a perfect relationship with Him, and that all He has is mine in Jesus. No questions asked. And that He doesn't take it back. And He's not waiting to say, well, you know, I got you off to a good start. Let's see what you can do next. Or, at the end of the day, you're like, well, today you had about a 70% sin to righteousness ratio. Yesterday it was 60, so you did a little better today. Or, today your ratio is like 60-40. It was a bad day. We'll have to test you again tomorrow. Now, of course, I'm not saying that sin doesn't matter. And of course, I'm not saying that obedience doesn't matter. What I'm saying is this. The answer for when we feel weighed down and beat down by our sin and our confusion and our guilt, or weighed down and beat down by the guilt that we and the shame that we carry because of things that have been done to us that we can't get over for whatever reason, or when we are eaten up with pride, but yet on the inside we can just feel that sort of rage and discomfort and sort of constant nagging that we hide and sort of put a show of pride or whatever. At the end of the day, it's neither one of those things that we point to. And the answer to both of those things is believing what God says about you. Not what you say, not even when you're like, I'm positive. Not what you say about yourself, not what your past says about you, not what that sort of voice in your head says about you all the time, constantly accusing you, constantly reminding you of what happened back then, constantly reminding you of what happened when you were a child or what happened to you last year. And I'm not belittling that at all. But those kind of things that always make you doubt who you are. The doctrine of justification comes and says, you're in a perfect relationship with God. And God knows all those things. And God is counting you, not lying. God looks at you and says, she's righteous. God looks at you and sees what? The righteousness of Jesus all over you and around you. He's aware of that other stuff. He's aware that we're sinners. That is precisely why Jesus came. Jesus came to save sinners. And in that sense, you see, we're righteous, but every day of our life is sort of this exercise in doing what? Coming to God, saying, you know, before you, in and of myself, I'm a sinner. And hearing God say, every single day, you're righteous. Because Christ rose from the dead. One of my probably old, I don't know, everybody's got heroes, but Martin Luther, it's said that when he when he was laying on his deathbed, and after he couldn't speak anymore, that he scrawled down something on this piece of paper. And that somebody looked at it at the end, and sort of this, on his deathbed, no longer able to talk, he had written, "We are all sinners." That is true. And it wasn't out of despair. But it was at the end of his life, understanding, everything we have is a gift. Everything we have is a free gift from God that we didn't earn. And God sets us free from feeling like we have to earn it. And God sets us free from feeling like we have to prove every day that we're worthy of the gift that he gave us. Or we have to come to grips with the fact that he says to us, "I understand, I know. I know you don't feel worthy. I know that you feel beaten down. I know you feel like you don't have any hope." But it's that same declaration of righteousness. That you're right with him. That your relationship with him is settled. It is settled. It's not unsettled by your anxiety. It's not unsettled by your depression. It's also not unsettled by your bouts of pride and your bouts of adding things to Jesus. Because the answer to both of those things, and both of those things can go completely off the rails, don't get me wrong, but it's the same answer to both, and that is righteousness in Jesus alone as a free gift, right? That's what Paul calls it. It's the free gift of justification to who? To anyone who believes. Now, one of the last things I want to share with you is that the idea of what is justifying faith? What is it? How much do you got to have? Well, the simple thing is, and I mentioned it before, and I've said this many times this week, justifying faith is not faith that is perfect faith. Right? You can fall back into like sort of living by your own works if you start thinking of, you know what, I just didn't believe enough today. Or I just prayed, and as I was praying, I felt just a little bit, I blew it. I almost had that one. I almost had that prayer, and at the very end, I doubted God's going to do it. Got to restart it again. Now, you see, if faith was flawless, it wouldn't be faith. If faith was perfect, that also wouldn't be faith. That would be called heaven or sight. Faith, by its very nature, is, in this sense, don't get me wrong, in this sense, it is imperfect in that it is always faith and not sight. It is always faith in the face of doubt, not in the absence of doubt. It is faith in the midst of trouble, not in troubles all of a sudden magically disappearing. Right? It is believing what God says about you, even if everything in your life is screaming at you something different. And it's also this. It is God saying what he says about you, that you're right in Jesus, even in the most mundane sort of daily things that happen, right? Because let's face it, not every day is a day filled with like ups and downs. It's just sort of in the middle where we wonder, does my life matter? Have I made anything in my life? Does my job matter? Does what I do matter? Nobody seems to notice what I do. I wanted to do so many things that I'm not doing. And of course, I'm not saying that we can't take steps, you know, to improve things or to do new things. Of course I'm not saying that. But in any given moment, you are only doing what you are doing at that moment. And we have this tendency to think, if I only would do X, Y, and Z, like next week then, or next month then, and then what we find is, well, another day went by, another week went by, another month went by. The thing is grasping hold of the doctrine of justification by faith doesn't add. It defines your life every moment. You don't have to be doing something outstanding to be right with God. You don't have to be an all-star. You don't have to be somebody who's like, you know, everybody comes to and everybody wants to talk to all the time. You don't have to be somebody who's ultra successful. You don't even have to be somebody who's got things figured out. In fact, you can absolutely be somebody who feels like you've got nothing figured out. You can absolutely be somebody who feels like 1 minute I'm up, 1 minute I'm down, and somehow 1 minute I'm both. Because Jesus came to save people just like that. He didn't come for the righteous, right? When Jesus says, I didn't come for the righteous, what he means is, I didn't come for those people who think they're righteous. I came for sinners. People who cry out to him in the midst of all their fears, all their anxiety, and even in the midst of their pride, who turn back to God and cry out, have mercy on me, I'm a sinner. And what do they find? Mercy. Not a God who's keeping score. Not a God who's constantly looking over our shoulder, right? That's the other thing we sort of fall into, is we have this idea that, yeah, God saved me by grace. It's all by grace. And then we have this idea that God is every day like standing around the corner like, aha, gotcha. I knew it. I knew you wouldn't last. I knew you would say that thing. I just knew it. And I was waiting. Like he's always hovering above us. Like he's always hovering above us, just waiting for us to trip up so he can be like, gotcha. I knew it. The good news for us is God is not like us. But every day, every single day of the Christian life is yet another day where we turn to God and say, Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner, and we accept what God says about us, that we are right in his eyes by faith in Jesus. Not because of our faith is so great and all-star and spectacular, but because our faith, which is a gift from God, perfectly unites us to Jesus, the Lord, who is himself our righteousness. Let's pray together. Father, I pray that these wouldn't just be mere words or mere doctrines or just things we'd think about. Lord, give us the grace to believe what you say. Give us the grace to believe and to know that you don't lie. You don't take back your word. You don't just put us to the test. That you have sent your son precisely for people like us in all of our circumstances. I pray for each and every one in this room who will go from here into all kinds of different circumstances, some into happy things that they'll experience tonight and tomorrow, and others, Lord, into questions and doubts and uncertainties, but certainly all of us into those situations eventually. So, Lord, I pray that we won't be defined by our ups or our downs. We won't be defined by our successes or by our failures, but only by this, that we, by faith, confess that Jesus is Lord. And so that by believing, we would have life in his name, justified before you, right in your eyes, because you say so. I pray this in Christ's name. Amen.